Saint Teresa of Avila is known to have been gifted with a sweetness of temperament, a lively wit and imagination, a tender and affectionate heart. You're invited now to join Father Thomas Dubay for his journey into the life of this Doctor of the Church on Teresa of Avila, Personality and Prayer. And now, here's our host, Father Thomas Dubay.
Thank you for welcoming us into your home. I'm Father Thomas Dubay, Society of Mary, Marist. And those of you who were with us last week will recall that we began to consider exploring the castle in this series on Teresa. And I explained last week why Teresa used that image. Won't do that again this time. But before we get to actually going through the castle, especially the final mansions of it, I'd like to tell you a little story that helps develop our point and introduce our point. Some few years ago, I was giving a talk, a lecture, at a federal penitentiary, a large one. I was invited by the chaplain, a fine man. I think I referred to him early in the series in some passing remark. And in that particular talk, and the subject was contemplation, I was asked to speak to the prisoners on it. They have a third order of Carmel there. The men want a deep prayer life. They're studying St. Teresa, as a matter of fact, with the help of a medical doctor who volunteers, and he's leading them through the works of St. Teresa. A marvelous thing when you think of it. And in any event, I was asked to speak to these prisoners, those that wanted this particular subject, and there were a pretty fair number of them. Two things I wish to mention about that evening. There are many more than two that could be mentioned. One is that as I was explaining the call to a deep prayer life, that all of us in the gospel are called to this deep immersion, taste and see how good the Lord is. Drink deeply of Him. That's Psalm 34. And I was explaining that and what contemplative prayer meant. And I remember seeing one man, he was off on the right side from my point of view in the room. It was a library, as a matter of fact. And he was just radiating joy. And the reason I'm quite sure was he had never heard before that he too had this destiny of this deep immersion in God. He just radiated joy. And that's one point I wish to make. We're going to be dealing now and exploring the castle with this deepening prayer life where one really does radiate with joy. I'm not making a judgment on that man's prayer life. I don't know for sure. But he surely was happy to hear about his call to a deep prayer life. And the other thing I'd like to share with you is that the medical doctor told me, I think it was on the way home after the lecture, he told me quite a few things about his work in that prison. And among them, he said, you know, two or three of the men in this prison, he really didn't say, I don't think, two or three, but it was in the plural, so it would be at least two or three, maybe four, five. He said, they said to me, and I quote here, I jotted it down right afterwards so that I would not unconsciously embellish it later when I spoke about it. He said, a couple prisoners have said to me that being in prison is the best thing that has happened to me. I'm quoting the prisoners. It's the best thing that has happened to me in my life. I've found God here. When you think of what prisoners suffer, in our American prisons, they don't suffer physically much at all. But there are plenty of others, very deep sufferings. And for a man to say that this is the best thing that's happened to him because he found God, well, that was a real lesson for me. How disturbed you and I can get about little petty things that don't amount to a row of pins and maybe consider them big deal or something. And here are these men suffering far more, happy that they had that chance because in the suffering they found God, and especially in a deep prayer life. Now, we want to explore the castle. And I share this little story with you, my aim being to help us to appreciate what so many of us take for granted. They certainly did, these prisoners. And as the chaplain also told me, he said, you know, there are not only conversions in prison, but a few of these men are saintly. And I think I was dealing with a couple of the saintly ones. That would be my guess. Now, exploring the castle. As a matter of fact, when we spoke last time about that God drawing us closer together in a kind of new recollection, which is what the word means, innerly aware of himself, drawing us to be alone with himself, not something we conclude. Already we were beginning to explore the fourth mansion, the first one that deals with infused contemplation. And now I want to talk about the main element as we take a look at that fourth mansion. It's called the prayer of quiet. And once again, as we did last time, I'm going to leave most of this pretty much in St. Teresa's own vocabulary. And then I'll just add a few explanations here and there. In the prayer of quiet, that's her name for it. It's not perfectly clear to you, perhaps, at the minute, unless you've read Teresa or studied her, what the quiet refers to, but it will become apparent. In the prayer of quiet, says Teresa, the will is united with God, sometimes almost continuously for a day or two. I might add, though, very often it's just for a little while. It might even be for a couple minutes, a minute or two. But in any event, the emphasis here is that the will is united to God. What does she mean? That in this beginning prayer, beginning infused prayer, God, as it were, takes over the human will. You see, the mind, and she would say understanding, memory, imagination, that can still wander around the universe. But there is a kind of, and she also uses the word, the Lord takes the will captive. And what she means there is not captive in a sense of force, but captive somewhat like our expression, that was a captivating song. We don't mean that we were bound in chains or anything, or rope. It means that it just kind of grabbed me. I liked it so much. Well, God, as it were, grabs the inner life of this person. She calls it the will, and it is that. While yet the imagination and the memory and one's thinking over things and understanding things and intellectual activity still can operate. So you can be doing your work, and at the same time, God has your will captive. Or at prayer time, you can be in a union with God, even though there are some involuntary distractions. You didn't want them. You didn't bring them about. But you are somehow aware of him. He's got you captive in that sense. And Teresa then makes the remark that he gives the person a delight and peace in the divine presence. And you notice that there's no image, no concept here in this prayer. That's discursive meditation. We spoke about that a few programs ago, and we're beyond that now. We're within the kind of getting close to the center part of the interior castle. And she notes that because this is infused prayer, the beginnings of it, it cannot be originated or prolonged by the human person. So if a person says to himself, oh, I like this so much, I'm going to just keep doing this. Nope, you can't prolong it. It's utterly given by God, and you can't do anything about it in the sense that you can't make it last longer. Now, three little rapid notes here. Observe first that the prayer intimacy with God is growing. There's a much deeper intimacy in prayer with God than, say, discursive meditation was, even than the recollection we spoke of last week. Secondly, there's also a growth in virtue. Teresa's at pains to indicate that as you grow in your prayer depth, you're going to become more patient, more loving, more humble, more everything that you ought to be. And the last little remark, this kind of prayer is common with generous people. Notice it's not just a few persons. If you've got people, whether they're married or whatever vocation, priesthood or religious life, if they're generous in living the gospel, they will get to this prayer fairly soon. It's common with people. Okay. Now, that then is a brief summary of the fourth mansion, or she often puts it in the plural, the fourth mansions. Now, that brings us then to the fifth mansions. And Teresa's terminology here, she calls this the prayer of full union. Sometimes she just speaks of it as union. And the word full means here that all of one's inner life, not only the will, but also the intellect, the memory, the imagination, they are all captivated by God. Indeed, I like to use the word much, and it certainly is her idea too. The person is totally absorbed within, in God. And here are some of the things that she says about it. This is a much deeper prayer, of course. And during this prayer, for 5, 10, 15 minutes, there'd be no distraction at all, because the whole inner life is deeply absorbed in God. And she says of it, I quote, incomparably greater delight than in the previous prayer of quiet. And she adds, it cannot bear so much joy. And the absorption brings a complete forgetfulness of self. This person is now so deeply in love with God, notice, and it's entirely given by Him, that the person doesn't think of oneself at all. Notice how it brings about a selflessness, as Pope John Paul puts it so beautifully, a sincere gift of self. He's not talking about contemplative prayer, but that expression certainly fits what we're dealing with here. And she further notes that in this absorption, one cannot doubt the divine presence, and the experience at least is often, if not always, indelible. And of course there's going to be a continuing transformation in holiness. Saint Peter speaks of this kind of thing, and at least his remark certainly fits what we're dealing with here. In his first letter, we read in verse 8, you did not see Him, yet you love Him. And still without seeing Him, you are already filled with a joy so glorious that it cannot be described. Notice, Teresa's expression was, incomparably greater delight, cannot bear so much joy. It's tremendous, and as Peter puts it, you can't describe it. Well, that's what's given. Now, this prayer we're talking about, this full union, doesn't last forever by any means. As a matter of fact, Teresa would say it won't last more than 20 minutes at most. Often it would be 5 minutes, 10 minutes. Because notice her remark, it cannot bear so much joy. See, worldly people often think how sad that they're nuns and brothers and priests, you know, and they're not married and they don't have all the joys that we have of life. And they're thinking mostly, some of them mostly for sure, of sense joys. And they have no clue, I'm afraid, of this which is incomparably greater. I'm not belittling any other kind of pleasure or delight, but notice, it's incomparable. You can't bear it for very long, and so God doesn't give it for too long for that very reason. The person couldn't sustain it for long. It's so deep an experience. So Peter is talking about something very close to that. You are already filled with a joy so glorious that it cannot be described. And with that beautiful idea in our mind, we'll take our break.
Teach us, good Lord, to serve you as you deserve, to give and not to count the costs, to fight and not to heed the wounds, to toil and not to seek for rest, to labor and not ask for any reward, save that of knowing that we do your will.
Welcome back. We are going to proceed now into the sixth of the mansions, which is ecstatic prayer. And you might think to yourself, and I would fully understand if you do, that after talking about this deep absorption, where one's whole inner life is so enthralled in God, that there really couldn't be any higher type of prayer, any deeper prayer. But you'd be wrong about that, because there is still deeper prayer, and it's ecstatic prayer. And I'm going to depend here, as we explain it, mostly on St. Teresa's words, which, as we have been doing, with comment here and there to explain. But first, I want to give you a very neat and compact definition of ecstatic prayer. It is ecstatic, no doubt about it. But I want to give you a definition because it is very accurate, and it goes like this. As the divine infusion, notice it's all given by God, this prayer and these mansions we're dealing with, all infused, poured in as it were, as the divine infusion of light, love, and joy increases, because it is increasing what God is giving, as this increases the indwelling Trinity and our awareness of the Trinity, we don't increase God, of course, but our awareness of Him increases. Still more intensely is the person enthralled, and the person is riveted even, and is fascinated, so that the external senses do not perceive outside stimulations. Let me run over that very rapidly. As a divine infusion of light, love, and joy, that's what's being given. That's what enthralls. That's what brings ecstasy. As the divine infusion of light, love, and joy increases, the indwelling Trinity still more intensely enthralls, rivets, and fascinates the person, so that even the external senses do not perceive outside stimulations. Touched. Even a person in ecstatic prayer can sometimes have a pin put into him and it doesn't feel it at all. That doesn't mean the person's dead, quite the contrary. The life inside is so intense, you don't notice the external stimulation. Let me give you a weak example of this to get the feel. You've experienced something like this, even though it's not ecstatic. But suppose there's a very, very dear person you haven't seen. Suppose it's the dearest one on earth you haven't seen for a couple years. And the person is coming in at the airport, and you go meet this man or woman, and you have a cold, for example, and the sniffles, and you've got the kind of clogged up feeling in your head from the cold. Now, at the moment that the person comes out of the plane and you see this individual and go and embrace and kiss, you don't feel a thing of the cold. As a matter of fact, that's why thieves commonly stimulate people in one way or another to pull the billfold out of their pockets. That happened to me, not a billfold, but something else, at Kennedy Airport once. They worked in twos, and they got my attention on something, and I had my foot against the bag so that I would feel if somebody touched it, but of course I didn't feel anything because my attention was on what the... I didn't know they were thieves at the moment until it was all over. Then I found out the bag was gone. But in any event, it's a basic human experience. If you are deeply enthralled, especially enthralled, or even deeply fearful, you just don't feel external stimulations. That's a weak example. But that's what's happening, not that sort of thing, but far stronger. One is so riveted and fascinated in God that the external senses don't operate. You don't hear something. You might not even see a thing. Now, that being said, let's take a look at St. Teresa, what she's got to say. She experienced ecstatic prayer often. And here is one of her many descriptions. I must be somewhat complete about this because, as much as we can, that is, because she did experience ecstatic prayer frequently. I quote, "I was present at Mass and received communion, but I don't know how it was possible. It seemed to me only a short time had passed. I was amazed when the clock struck, and I found I had been in that rapture, ecstasy, and glory for 2 hours. She hadn't noticed what was going on. For 2 hours. It seems this fire comes from above, from God's true love. For however much I may desire and seek and strive after it, I play no part in obtaining even a spark of it." Now, that borne in mind, let's speak of some traits of ecstatic prayer. The first trait is that it often occurs out of the blue. There's no preparation for it. The person wasn't thinking of God at that moment. And out of the blue, whammo, if I may use a modern term for it, it occurs suddenly. A person might be in the midst of business, doing something else, eating a meal, having a chat with somebody, whammo. Second trait, it is not continual in duration, though it could happen, or at least the results of it Teresa says, for a whole day. And it's not continual because it would be just exhaustive of the person to be that enthralled for any great length of time. I don't think you could take it. Third trait, there is therefore an ebb and a flow. That's my own terminology, not Teresa's, but certainly her thought. There's an ebb and flow with the prayer of quiet, what we described a little bit earlier, so that at one time the person has that very gentle awareness of God's presence, the quiet prayer, and then you might get ecstatic prayer right in the middle of it, and then back to the quiet prayer. Ebb and flow. And even sometimes when one has had ecstatic prayer, there can be dry periods of prayer. That can happen still. It's not yet the transforming union. The next trait, this ecstatic prayer cannot be resisted successfully. Let me cite a passage from St. Teresa in her life, that is her autobiography, in chapter 20, number 4. And it's her typical vigorous language in explaining things. So forceful is this enrapturing, and by the way, she uses different terms to describe ecstatic prayer. Sometimes you'll read her say the flight of the spirit, where one's inner spirit seems to leave the body. Doesn't really leave, but it seems like it. You see, it's so tremendous an experience of God. Or she calls it an enrapturing. In any event, so forceful is this enrapturing that very many times I wanted to resist and used all my energy, that is, to resist. Especially sometimes when it happened in public. See, Teresa, in her great humility, didn't want to be to stand out in a group or in a crowd or in the chapel. Remember how she liked people to think lowly thoughts about her, and they would think all these lofty thoughts, what a marvelous woman she must be to go into ecstasy with God, you know. And of course she was marvelous, but she was so humble when she could kind of feel it coming on, and sometimes she could, she tried to resist it. That's what she's talking about here. And she used, notice, all her energy to resist it. And then, her comment. At times, I was able to accomplish something, but with a great loss of energy, as when someone fights with a giant and is worn out. Notice that imagery, one of her beautiful examples. And she picks little Teresa, I mean, being a woman, I don't suppose she was much more than 5, 6, 7, or 8 or something. I don't know how tall she was. But anyhow, imagine her wrestling with a giant. Because this communication of God to the soul, it can be that strong. If you try to resist it, you will be worn out. Now, so at some times, she was able to accomplish something, though with a great deal of loss of energy. Then she adds, at other times, it was impossible for me to resist. So sometimes, even though she tried very hard, she just couldn't resist. And by the way, I just might add another idea here, just popped into my mind. Sometimes Teresa was in such ecstasy that she would really rise from the ground. We call that levitation. And it's not some kind of magic thing at all. This is very different. This is part of a deep communion with God. It doesn't happen to everybody by a long shot. But it did happen to St. Teresa. So, at times then, she could not resist successfully, and she just had to put up with people thinking great things about her and the depth of her prayer life. Well, it was a fact, and I personally think no harm in knowing the facts. Matter of fact, I'm glad we know the facts about her. Now, the fifth trait of this ecstatic prayer, not surprisingly, this enthrallment in the pure beauty who is God produces still deeper holiness. And she's careful again to point that out. It's not just an experience for the sake of an experience. It's an experience for the sake of coming closer to God and identifying our will with His. And she points that out. And I quote her, "In this prayer, wings sprout, enabling one to fly with ease." And she's using another image there, namely fly. Now you can really ascend to the great heights of holiness because this prayer so perfects you from within. And she uses another expression. Christ's banner is now completely raised. In other words, this person Not at the pinnacle yet. That's coming in our next program, Transforming Union, but very close to the pinnacle. Christ's banner, meaning that Christ is completely victorious now in this person. There's practically no selfishness at all, not deliberate, at least, and very little even indeliberate selfishness. This person is really far advanced in holiness. I like her image so much. His banner is completely raised. Then she continues, the soul sees very clearly how little everything here below should be esteemed and the trifle that it is. Namely, it should be things are valuable and all the rest, but things sought for themselves, aside from God, trifle, even damaging. And one sees that sees it far better now than ever before. And then she adds further, from here on, the soul desires nothing for itself. This person is totally in love with God, and therefore loves other human beings far more. Desires nothing for itself. In this prayer, one sees not only the serious faults and cobwebs in its soul, but any speck of dust, no matter how small, because the sun is very strong. Notice the image of the interior castle. This person is very close to the center, who is God, who is the supreme sun, and consequently will see even the little tiny defects that previously did not see at all. And that's one of the differences between a saint and the lesser of us. The saints aren't scrupulous. They've got a very tender conscience. They're very close to God, and consequently they see even the smallest little deficiency, because the sun is so close, as she so well puts it here. And this, therefore, brings us very close to the Lord's own statement in Matthew 5:48. Be you perfect, as your heavenly Father is perfect. It takes very little imagination to see that this person is really living that commandment. God bless you. We'll continue next week.
This has been St. Teresa of Avila, Personality and Prayer, with Father Thomas Dubé from the St. Louis Rectory in St. Paul, Minnesota.